Hello, you are very welcome to the Sunday edition of The Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. A big thanks as always to Sinead for keeping us company since 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on the show this evening, I've got Gaelic Games, rugby, football, and we'll be chatting about the Paralympics as well. Let's get into it. Starting with Gaelic Games, where there was a 6-game card in the Co-op Superstore's Premier Senior Hurling Championship today. Blackrock came away with a 5-point win from their matchup with Father O'Neill's, and Charleville suffered a 2-point loss against Kanturk. Elsewhere, Douglas lost by 4 points in their clash with Newtown Shandrum, and Middleton were 3-point victors against Erin's Own. Sarsfields played out a dominant win against Bishopstown, and finally St Finbar's earned a 6-point win in their game against Newcestown. To football now, where Nations League action continues this evening. At half time between Bulgaria and Northern Ireland, the latest score is 1-0 to the hosts, Bulgaria. Portugal will get underway against Scotland at 7:45. Here at home in the FAI Intermediate Cup, Temple Rovers were 3-1 victors over Ballinhasig, while Cove Wanderers lost 1-0 to Rockmount. The closing ceremony of the 2024 Paralympic Games takes place in Paris this evening, where Ellen Keane and Michael Murphy are Ireland's flag bearers. Team Ireland are coming home from the Paris Games with a tally of 6 medals in total. In tennis, world number one Jannik Sinner of Italy faces American Taylor Fritz in the final of the men's singles at the US Open in New York this evening. Sinner won the Australian Open earlier this year, while Fritz is bidding for his first Grand Slam title, and play is due to get underway there at 7 p.m. Finally, in cycling, Ireland's Eddie Dunbar has started the last stage of the Vuelta a España, sitting in 11th place in a general classification. The Cork native won yesterday's 20th stage, marking his second stage win of the tour. Okay, let's start off with the elephant in the room. We'll get the reaction to Ireland's Nations League loss to England last night out of the way first. Let's do it. It was, of course, a 2-0 loss with salt being rubbed into the wound thanks to the fact that the two English goals were scored by none other than Declan Rice and Jack Grealish, two players who have, of course, been involved in Irish squads in the past but ultimately chose to play for England. Here's new Ireland coach Hamir Hallgrimsson sharing his post-match reaction to the results.
First of all, we have to admit that we were second best in this game by far. Good game from England, and starting with just congratulating them with a good performance before we talk about us. I think it was a lot of things. First and foremost, I think it's confidence in decision making, initiative. That was the big difference between the teams. I know the individual quality, we can talk about that, but when you are defending in a collective way, you need to take decisions, you need to believe in action and a reaction. And I think we were not good at this, comparing England coming from a good Euro, coming from winning the under-21, all their passes, all their movements, all the decisions were taken in the belief that it would be successful, whether I felt like us were kind of always hesitating, especially for me, looking at the defensive, jumping, pressing, etc. It was like more individual actions instead of a collective. The same decision-making, confidence taking, for example, when we had the chance to cross, we didn't take it. When we had the chance to shoot, we didn't take it, but we got into good positions. And it was kind of the lack of confidence to take the decision to do things. I think that was the big difference for me in this team. I know they played better. They probably have, you know, they have all the experience from the Euros being together for a long time. So it's a team that knows each other quite well. For me, that's the biggest difference.
That lack of confidence, perhaps understandable considering some of the results that they have gone through over recent years. How do you correct that? How do you give them that confidence off the back of another disappointing result?
Yeah, I think to be consistent. Now we've played a good team, really good team. They exposed our weakness, so we can use a lot from this game, you know. Not talking about all the negatives, we can show them, or we can do this better, you know, because we didn't do this, this happened, etc. So I think, for one, it gives us an opportunity to look at what we are doing. Two things, you can react in two ways. When you lose a game, you can restart, do something totally different next time, then I would probably not get you anywhere. But we tried to do something, and I think we did the second half much better than the first half. It was more initiative. We got a little bit higher. We were more compact. Maybe easy to say when you're winning 2-0, you probably take the foot off the gas a little bit. But I think we can learn from this, grow from this, and improve step by step from what we were doing, instead of changing personnel or changing formation next game.
How did you feel the five at the back worked tonight?
No, given that we had five at the back, we were too open. If you see the first goal, it's just a pass through the heart of the team. Should never happen at any level of football. So internationally, you're unhappy. But, you know, if you were playing the youth football, you would still be unhappy with a goal like this. Second goal was a given goal, I think 4, 5, 6 given goals through us. Again, shouldn't happen at this level. So it's things that, you know, because of lack of initiative, closing, taking the steps, we conceded like we did. So we just need to improve from that.
Maybe for all the lessons to be learned from today, the players almost have to forget about today going into Tuesday's game.
Yeah, correct. We really wanted to have good results against England, but I think most of us are unhappy that we wanted a better performance. So we talked in the dressing room. Now let's try to look positive on the next two games. You know, this was a negative. We cannot carry that into the game against Greece. Greece has shown that they play good against Ireland, so they have the upper hand. So we need to change that. So we can't be crying until we play Greece. We need to kind of energize, use every moment to be ready for that one.
Was that your team selection and formation, or was it John's, or how was the division?
No, like we said in the beginning, we're all in it together, but for sure I need a lot of help in the first one or two camps. Not knowing the characters of the players, but I'm learning as we go. Hopefully I will have maybe more authority when time goes on, but I really like the staff. John and Paddy have been fantastic, big support, and the backroom staff as well has been fantastic, and I'm so grateful, I'm so happy I'm here, because we will grow for sure.
And for clarity, do you expect to have more control or more input into team selection and formation selection going forward? Is that
I hope so. Yeah. I hope my knowledge on the players and the culture and of Ireland in general will grow. But listen, when you come to a new culture, you cannot think you can change everyone, in my case, to an Icelandic. You have to adapt to the culture, to the players, to what they have been doing, and using what is good is also when you come into a new environment. And you start to change things because you like it in a certain way. You cannot do that. You have to first see what is good and what is bad before you change it. So my learning now is to see, you know, what is good, what we can change, etc. So I would say 95% of the things I see here is quality, absolute quality.
You can change a lot then, based on what you saw there.
And a I know now I'm talking about the staff engaged.
Do you feel like you have to change a lot of how the team is set up having watched that?
Absolutely not, no. It's a really good setup from the FAI and the staff.
When I say setup, I mean formation.
Ah, you're talking about formation. Sorry, I misunderstood. Look, I've said again and again, formation for me is irrelevant. Is it irrelevant what formation you play? It's about fitting the players you have. It's about the opponent you play. Sometimes you expect to have more ball possession. You probably would like to have more players up front. Sometimes you expect to have less ball possession. You probably need more protection. So you need to be adaptable on that one.
I suppose I'm just wondering, were you tempted at any stage to just go back to a flat back four, or was there not enough time just to, this week it was just going to be too confusing to try and do that, and maybe even too late at halftime?
Yeah, we talked about at halftime, do we want to change a formation? And we had in mind what we could do, but we decided to try to improve instead of jumping from one thing to another. Maybe that would have hurt us more, I don't know. But I think we did much better second half with a little bit of more initiative, more brave, coming a little bit higher up on the pitch. So we were happy with the second half. Like I said before, it's easy when your opponent is winning 2-0. You don't know if it's because they backed off or we did better. So.
And just in terms of, you said before the game, again, just a couple of things that you really wanted to emphasise to the players of your way, even though you couldn't do too much. Do you think that the players responded well to that, and were you happy with some aspects of the play?
Yes and no. Like always, you're happy with some things, you're not happy with other things. Listen, England played well. I don't think the formation would have mattered. I don't think who the players were would have mattered. It was just, I think, this lack of taking initiative, believing in what we are doing would be successful. Hopefully going forward, there will be better belief in the things that we plan to do. But at the moment, I can understand it, the difference between these two teams.
Henry, you spoke about wanting your players to make life difficult for the players in the other team and make them uncomfortable. There were a few points, particularly in the first half, when the crowd seemed to be getting a bit frustrated with the amount of time England had involved. Were you satisfied with the intensity that your players brought to the game today?
Yeah, I think so. It's easy to stand on the sidelines and shout go, 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 go when England played us through. So we were running a lot without ball possession. So, I could understand, and I can understand the crowd. And I have to give them a lot of respect and thanks for showing up in numbers and the support throughout the game. Even though we were losing 2-0, they kept on cheering us on. Really like that. But yeah, for sure. I understand that there was, at times, the players were tired. So what do you do when you're tired? You kind of go in compactness. You don't allow them to play through you while you're tired, and then you get your energy back and you go and press. So I think it's understandable.
All right, let's move on. We're going to talk Gaelic games for a bit now. Newtown Shandrum will face Middleton in the quarterfinals of the Co-op Superstores Cork Premier Senior Hurling Championship after their 217-19 point win over Douglas at Moorabbey this afternoon. First half goals from Conor Griffin and Ronan Geary were key for Newtown, while Jamie Collin finished with 8 points and Shane Kingston had the same tally for Douglas on the other side. The other semi-finals sees Black Rock take on Kanturk and Imokilly will play Father O'Neill's, while Sarsfields will advance directly to the semi-finals. After the game, Dennis Hurley of the Echo spoke to Newtown selector Alan O'Brien, and prior warning, there is a bit of wind interference in this audio.
It was easier in a way coming here that it was just going to be winner take all, and you were able to approach that way,
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, when the draw was made at the start of the year between Sars, Bishopstone, ourselves and Douglas, we kind of knew that if we could target Bishopstone the first game, we knew we were up against the county champions in the second game. And look, we came up tomorrow to beat the county champions, but we weren't good enough on the day. But ourselves and Douglas, we felt that there was not much between both teams. It was always going to come down to the last game. And look, we did target this game, and we were just proud of our boys today. They gave a phenomenal performance. And we were down a few players. We lost a few players. players after the Sars game.
Yeah.
Unfortunate injury to a young Rory Troy there, cornerback, at training Tuesday night after Sars. And I said after the first round that we probably have the best panel since 2009.
Yeah.
But we played today possibly missing four starters. And look, we're being stretched now.
Yeah.
But look, we'll drive on and we'll enjoy tonight and we'll drive up for a quarter final.
And did you win or lose the toss?
We won the toss.
And played against the wind.
And we played against the breeze, which we wanted to,
yeah,
be honest.
And we won after 16 seconds.
Yeah, a super start. Well worked move up the middle of the field and just a dream start, to be honest.
Yeah.
We just felt against Sars that we started a bit slowly.
Okay.
And we knew that we had to target a good start against Douglas.
Yeah.
And whether that was with the breeze or against the breeze, it just had to be done that way, and we were delighted with that we did.
And I think 6 points after the second goal, and then you only had one more point for the rest of the first half. How was the feeling at half time then?
We were reasonably happy at half time because we felt before the match the wind was surely working,
yeah,
maybe 5-6 points to the team, and we went in we were happy with our first half performance, especially the start.
Yeah.
And look, Douglas are a good team. They weren't going to lie down. They came back and they battled. I think the second quarter there they got 12 shots away compared to 6 in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And look, they got more scores on the board, which ultimately they were going to come at us.
Yeah, but you suppose you weathered that storm and didn't let them get too far ahead, and you were able to power on again then.
Yeah, well, we regrouped at half time and we knew we had a strong breeze at the second half. We asked our lads not to start shooting aimlessly and from bad positions.
Yeah.
And look, we know that we have one or two dangerous forwards that if they're given the right ball in the right area of the field, that they can hurt players,
yeah,
and teams. And luckily enough, we got a bit of a run there, I think, in the middle of the second half, and we just drove on from there.
And do you think the Sars game, do you think you learned one or two things from that?
Oh, we did. Anytime when you go and you test yourselves against the best,
yeah,
you have to take learnings from that. You have to take your chances against the better teams. We,
yeah,
know that ourselves, against other teams, you might get away with a couple of wides. We hit, 17 or 19 against Bishopstown the first round.
Yeah.
That's not going to do against Sars, or that's not going to do going forward.
Yeah.
Against any team left in the competition, we know that,
Yeah, and I suppose a positive across the three matches. I think scored 10 goals, conceded only one.
Yeah. We're getting goals, which is great. Goals, we probably need goals, we have good lads that will get points for us as well. But we have, we have a few danger men inside, and they take a bit of minding. And earlier on, if they get the ball in the right area, they can hurt defenders.
And I think it's Middleton now in the quarterfinals, the way the rankings pan out, I suppose another match 2 weeks time again, good to be kind of in the routine, and no football to interfere either.
No, definitely no football where we are. If we were told we were playing Middleton in the quarter final when the draw was made last December, we would have taken the round off first, so we're delighted with that.
All right. As I've been doing for the last couple of weeks, I'm going to spend some time chatting about the Paralympics. Today was the final day of the Games in Paris, and Team Ireland will be coming home with a total of 6 medals. It was gold for Katie George Dunleavy and Linda Kelly in the Women's B individual time trial, Ireland's only gold medal. But that same duo also claimed a silver medal in the Women's B road race. And then Dunleavy went on to win a 3rd medal, her 2nd silver of the Games, in tandem with her other pilot, Eve McChrystal. That was in the Women's C 300 metres individual pursuit. Ireland's other silver medal was won by 19-year-old Limerick swimmer Roisin Ebrian in the Women's 100 metre backstroke S13 event. But that wasn't Roisin's only medal of the Games, because she also took bronze in the Women's 200 metre individual medley SM13. And the 6th medal is being taken home by sprinter Orla Comerford. She crossed the line in 3rd place in the women's 100 metres T13 on the track, just moments after Roisin Ebrian won her bronze medal in the pool. Here's Orla and her family speaking with Off the Wall's Aisling O'Reilly in Paris.
Congratulations, how do you feel?
Thank you. I'm so excited. I'm delighted. I'm so lucky to have such incredible support here in the stands and with us tonight, my amazing family, my incredible friends. I feel immensely lucky tonight.
Could you hear them out on the track?
Yeah, how could you not? They are the loudest bunch of people out there. I'm so lucky, and it's great because I can't see them, so good thing I could hear them.
And how did you feel out on the track tonight? Because that heat in particular was phenomenal.
Yeah, I felt good. I felt really confident. I was excited. I was, I was in a really good headspace. Unfortunately, it wasn't the time I'd hoped for. But it just makes me excited to go again. It makes me hungry, and yeah, it's an incredible honour.
You'd been at the Rio Games, the Tokyo Games. It didn't go to plan. And as you said yourself, third time's a charm.
Third time is a charm. Yeah, I'm feeling very, very lucky and just really grateful. Yeah.
And one man that would be looking down today and really, really proud. I know I sat down with you before and we talked about your coach, Brian Corker, and you've sadly passed away. He'd be very proud tonight.
I hope he would be. I think he would be. He really felt like he was there every step of the way. So, yeah, it was. And his family are here as well. So I'm incredibly lucky to have their support. I think he would be.
Woman. And Dara, I'm sure you know as well, everything that she's been through to get to this point, to have the medal now, is pretty special.
Oh, it is, of course. It's special because she's worked so hard, and it's just amazing that she's got some reward for that. So we're very proud of her. Brilliant.
Can we just take a moment as well for the fact that every one of Team Ireland's medals were won by female athletes? They absolutely smashed it, and what a fantastic example they're setting across each of their events. Speaking of setting a fantastic example, Ellen Keane brought the curtain down on an incredible career this week. The Dublin swimmer won Paralympic gold in Tokyo 2021 and bronze in Rio in 2016. She finished sixth in the backstroke this week and narrowly missed out on a medal in her breaststroke event. She has also been speaking to Aisling O'Reilly from Off the Ball.
Ellen Keane, your final race at this Paralympic Games. 5 Paralympics you've now been involved in.
Yeah.
What was it like for the final swim? Emotional, I'd say.
Oh my God, it was so much fun. Right before I went out into the race, when I was in the call room, I was watching Barry make the final. Me and another guy from another country got in trouble for cheering. He needed to be quiet. And then just sitting there waiting to go out, I actually got a bit emotional. I started crying really quietly, and a few of the guys I've known for a long time were like giving me the thumbs up. So just walking out, it was so lovely to see all the flags, all of these guys. Really easy to spot everyone in the crowd. And like, my favorite thing about backstroke is when you are about to start, you jump in the water. So I just did one big jump. I was like, this is my moment to relax. And then like my last thing I said to my coach before I went into the call room was, I don't want to come last. And she was like, you might come last, Ellen. And I was like, no, I'm not coming last. So I could see the girl beside me, and I knew she was a lot taller than me. I knew she had a bit bigger reach than me. So I was just like, I'm going to get to that wall before her. And that was my goal, and that's what I did.
Amazing. And to have your family here, like that wave to the crowd, even before you got in the pool, when you got out of the pool as well, obviously having your mom, Laura, your dad, Eddie, Graham, your brother here as well, to have them all here must be amazing.
Yeah, so, so special. Like, the arena is huge. There's so many people here, but somehow it still feels a little bit small because there's so many Irish people here that it's so easy to spot your home. Like, it's so easy to spot Ireland. And they made it so special. That's why I stayed. That's why I didn't retire after Tokyo, because I wanted to retire in front of my friends and family, and that's what I did.
Amazing. And the journey that she's been on, Laura, it really has been just incredible. What has it been like as a family?
It's been amazing. We've been to so many different countries cheering her on, and she's done absolutely fantastic. We've had so many happy memories in different countries that we'll have forever, you know, that kind of way. And just proud we're in or out of the water.
And Eddie, to see her winning gold and bronze medals at the Paralympics must have been amazing.
Oh, it's been brilliant, yes. And even these games here, they were amazing, honest to God. The crowds were so lovely, the French were lovely. So it's just the end of another chapter for Ellen and us, you know.
A massive part of your lives.
Massive part of our lives. We'll have to have a big party now after all this. A retirement party. Then she gets a real job.
And a retirement party for the suits.
Yeah, you wore the dark blue one.
I wore the dark blue one, yeah. The people spoke, but I mean, I think they're talking about their suits. They're going to have to bring them out for the retirement party.
Right.
Yeah,
these are iconic.
I mean, suits will go up for auction and then keep bidding, lads.
And overall, Ellen, what has sport meant for you when you got involved, the opportunities, the family, the friends that it's brought with it? What has it meant for you?
The world. Like, it has been my whole entire life. It's been the place I felt like I belong the most. It's been the place that I feel like I've been allowed to be myself and learn who I am and learn to love myself. And I really hope whatever the next chapter is, that I'm able to feel that happiness and that secure, and that just, I just want to be myself. And I think that's what I'm going to go look for now when I leave the pool, is what makes me feel the same way that swimming did.
You've really been a trailblazer for the sport in general, like all the young kids that are aspiring to now go out and achieve their dreams. What would your message be to any young kids that are looking to go on now and get involved in sport?
Follow your heart, just make sure you love it. Try not to stress out about the pressures about sport. As long as you're enjoying it, you're gonna do well. And I think that shows, like here today, I just went out there and I wanted to enjoy it, and I had a really great race. And I think the difference between that and my breaststroke was I just felt the pressure a little bit, and I was a bit too stressed out, and I just didn't have the swim I wanted to. And that's why I was so happy to have that one last swim, because I was happy, I was ready, I felt like a kid again. And that's important, to make sure that you always feel like a kid when you're competing.
Will we see you in the water at some stage, even a hobby, or will you take up other sports?
Absolutely not.
Oh wow. And Graeme, I'm sure you're a proud big brother.
Oh, definitely, yeah. She's done the family very proud over the years, and yeah, I'm always proud of my sister, so.
Huge savings on
Kenzie Foley here with you until 7 o'clock. They're just heading towards the 68 minute mark now in that game, the Nations League game between Bulgaria and Northern Ireland, but it is still 1-0 to Bulgaria, so I'll try and get you a final score on that before we finish up here this evening. But we are switching to rugby briefly now to hear from Munster forward and Irish international Deirdre Nicavaird. The Cork woman is returning from a serious ACL injury which she suffered back in 2023, and she's hoping to feature against Australia in the upcoming one-off test, which is a warm-up for the WXV games against New Zealand, Canada and the USA, which are coming up later this month. And Dervla was speaking to the media about her return to the Irish squad and about competition for her place in the team.
Getting back into the thick of things, like, I think today is exactly 9 months post-op, so it's pretty exciting. It's a relatively tight timeline, but just like huge thanks to everyone in the IRFU really for putting in the time and effort into making sure that I did get back, and especially Roisin, our physio, Nathan Cardy, who was working with me a lot as well, Ed Slattery, our S&C, who kind of took the reins on things for the last while, and then the coaches for keeping me involved in everything really, and the girls who've been phenomenal supports for me really throughout. It has been a tough year, like, no doubt about that. Definitely a low point in my career, but between my friends and family and the girls on the team, it's been easier to get through, let's say. Yeah. I'd like to eventually have a good day in green. That would be everybody else has gotten to do it once or twice now at this stage. So, but like, to be honest, I think we were all just so focused on World Cup qualification, and I think we're in a position now as a squad that we really don't care who's doing it, as long as we get this team back to where it should be. Like, that's something we've spoken about a lot as a group, is it's team first, and I think Scott drives that, the rest of his coaching squad drive that, and the girls especially, Tricky and Sam, they drive that massively. So it was a disappointing day in terms of, for me, I wish I could have contributed in a different way, but what an incredible day at the same time. I remember being up in the stands with a few of the girls totting up points, and a lot of the girls on the pitch didn't know the result in the Welsh game, so they had no idea that they had qualified us for a World Cup, and then getting to say that to some of them when we got onto the pitch at the end was, you know, just incredible. Like, they didn't believe us not until they saw the sign. So it was still so special. Glad to have been there for sure. Yeah, she's here with us. So it's been a tough couple of weeks for Sam. She had it was in a prem game with Gloucester, and it's an unfortunate one. I think everyone in rugby, probably everyone in women's sport, has had a scare from it or knows someone that has done it. It's unfortunately a very common injury, and it's a tough one, but I think we can draw from each other for support. We'll miss Sam big time, but as I said, she's involved in here. She's going to be helping out, and having her support and her leadership throughout the whole thing is going to be massive. And like with myself trying to get back for things, she's going to have a timeline in her head, and we'll do everything we can to help her get to that point as well. Yeah, like at the very early stages of your rehab, you don't really know. I suppose you're waiting to see how the knee reacts to different things, and every knee is a little bit different. It was maybe just 2 weeks too tight and too much of a gamble. Like, I'm in pretty good nick now coming back, but equally I wouldn't have done as much training as the girls would have done down in Munster, just with the rehab restrictions and having to have certain people watching you come back in sessions and things like that. So it just wasn't the right timing. But I don't think it's going to have made a huge difference to my progression. This was always my target, and it would have been nice to run out in the Munster jersey for sure, but I think making the smart decision was probably the right call. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, really good. Look, it's fantastic. I mean, Wafer's an unbelievable athlete, and I suppose the thing with it is, like, you want to be competing with the best. I'm delighted to have that much competition in the back row, because you know that if you do get the opportunity and you do earn a spot, that you've been pushed absolutely as hard as you can be to get there. And like, Wafer's going to keep doing that, Britt Hogan's going to keep doing that, Tricky's leading in every aspect of the game. So yeah, it's a challenge for sure, but I'm so pleased that that's the challenge that's waiting for me. And if it's a matter of coming off the bench or, you know, supporting the squad just by being a training panellist, I don't really mind anymore, as long as I'm back out there training with the girls. So definitely looking to compete, obviously, and looking to push the girls. But as I said, World Cup prep and WXV, getting that underway first is the main.
I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Dara Collin, who is the head coach of the Cork City FC amputee team. Dara, how are things?
I'm very good. Looking forward to the next couple of weeks for the team. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, big couple of weeks coming up. I suppose maybe we'll start at the beginning first. How did you actually get involved with the team?
Oh yeah, okay. So back in early 2020, just before COVID, the then Cork City women's manager, Ronan Collins, would have known about me, I suppose, through my grassroots club in Ballinhassig AFC. So we would have had a relationship, a friendship there through football. And there was a couple of openings in the club. He was trying to get me involved with the kind of the burgeoning underage girl section that he was setting up at the time. But I didn't have the expertise or the time back then to get involved. And then he said, well, why don't you try the amputee football? So I said I'd try, have a look, and I haven't looked back.
Wow, okay, so that's maybe, I guess, about 4 years now kind of in the process.
Yeah, four and a half now, yeah.
And my understanding is there's three amputee teams in Ireland, so is there any form of kind of domestic competition involved there?
Yeah, so there's the IAFA League, the Irish Amputee Football Association League. So the three teams are Shamrock Rovers, Bohemian FC, and obviously Cork City FC. So we play probably about every 3 weeks around the country. Dublin, Galway, could be Care, Cork. So we do rotate our fixtures to try and get that exposure.
Yeah.
And we actually have players coming from Scotland to play in the league as well, within the three teams.
And is that because they wouldn't have that similar structure there?
Yeah, well, previously they would have played as a team here in the Irish League.
Okay.
But the decision was made a couple of years ago to go 7-a-side as opposed to the previous 5-a-side.
Okay.
7-a-side would be the international standard.
Yep.
So we incorporated those players then, making 7-a-side teams in the three League of Ireland clubs.
And do they like uproot their lives? Are they based here now? Is that how it has to work?
No, in fairness to them, like, they do uproot their lives in the sense that every couple of weeks they're jumping on a flight from Edinburgh or Glasgow into Dublin or Cork, and spending the whole day here. And sometimes they're on the road at 2 a.m. playing a match at 12 noon and then flying out that evening, you know. So there's a lot of commitment from their point of view, and obviously from all of the players' point of view, we're on the road quite a bit, you know.
Yeah. And as you mentioned at the start, there's a big kind of month, I suppose, in September. The team is going to be travelling to Italy for the EAFF Champions League 2024. Can you sort of tell us a bit more about the origins of that competition and what's actually involved?
Yeah, so essentially it's the 8 best club teams in Europe.
Okay.
So Cork City last year won what was a domestic treble. We won the league and the two cups available to us.
Amazing.
It was an incredible season, and a tough season that we might talk about later in terms of just, you know, we lost a close friend of ours in the team, but we ended up winning the league I think it's by a single goal, believe it or not, which qualified us then for the Champions League this year. So
yeah, fantastic. And my understanding is you're going to have games against teams from Turkey and Poland.
Yeah.
How much are you able to kind of find out about those teams in advance, you know, in terms of prepping for them? Sure. and getting ready?
Well, the beauty about the Turks and the Poles in particular, we also have Everton in our group as well.
Yeah.
Those three nations will be very strong on social media.
Okay.
So a lot of their games are live streamed. Now, our games as well are live streamed, so I'm sure that they'll be doing their homework on our players. We would put, obviously, our stuff up on YouTube as mm-hmm. we play. So we're going to be, obviously, the last couple of weeks, the lads have been kind of keeping an eye on clips. I've watched one or two games. I've seen the Turks even in training.
Wow.
They're going to that level of kind of, but that's their PR machine behind in Turkey. Like, they're huge, like, amputee football is massive in Turkey, and they'll be the hot favourites. Sahin Bey is the name of the club. We're obviously able to get some information back and prepare. We're under no illusions it's going to be really tough.
Yeah.
I mean, there are teams, and like I said, Wisla Krakow of Poland and Sahin Bey of Turkey, like, they've guys coming in from Ghana and Spain to play for them. So, like, there's a budget there behind them. Mm. Now, we've got great support from our club in terms of the actual logistics. Aina Buckley in particular has been brilliant, and sponsors. So, yeah, like, but that's the level of competition that we're up against.
Amazing. And I suppose you mentioned it there, like, there's players coming from all over the place to take part in this. What are the biggest challenges that you're expecting, I suppose, knowing the strengths and weaknesses of your own team?
Well, I suppose one of the biggest things is time with the players. So, like, we are dealing, as I mentioned there, we're dealing with players from Scotland. We're dealing with players, some of our players are based in Westmeath, Meath, just outside Dublin. You know, Waterford, Cavan. So, like, we have a spread of guys, and Limerick as well. I should mention Pat Hickey's Limerick, just in case. But in fairness to the guys in that area, like the Munster area, that we do train down here in Cork, in Bishopstown. We train about once or twice a week if we can, but that's the biggest obstacle versus the teams in Turkey or in Wisla Krakow or in Everton, where they're getting their players together as a complete unit probably more often.
Yep.
So I have to rely a lot on the lads doing their own bits and pieces in terms of fitness, and getting their football in with their local 11-a-side clubs if they can. And obviously trying to get them together then on match days in the league, and just trying to work on a few bits that we can carry into the competition in a couple of weeks.
And what do the next couple of weeks look like for the team? Are you kind of ramping up preparations? How is it looking?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we're pushing the guys hard now in the next couple of weeks. We'll be flying out on, I think it's the 18th, Wednesday the 18th, and the competition kicks off then on the Friday. So we have a bit of time to prepare when we get over there. It's in Sassuolo in Italy, just outside Bologna. So, like, travel preparations, there's in terms of the fitness, the food, the medical preparation, we have to make sure that the guys are fit and healthy going over. So yeah, like, that's the next couple of weeks now is obviously the players need to focus on the football, and then myself and the club need to work out the logistics, if you like.
And I know that I've spoken to Danny Murphy on the show a couple of times about the structures that are there to support the women's team. How does that look for your team? What's kind of available to the guys?
Well, as I mentioned, like, Aina's been superb. Aina's the CEO of the club. There would have been difficulties years ago prior to me coming in. I know that there was probably, maybe the focus wasn't necessarily on that, but I cannot say for one second that I haven't felt anything but support. Even in terms of just small things like just checking out the flights and hotels and transfers, that's been taken away from me, which is a huge benefit for someone who just wants to focus on the football and the lads. That's been a great help, and there's obviously, you know, we're hoping to announce a sponsor very soon in the next couple of days, and they've been very supportive in that side of things as well, because obviously these things cost money. We're not funded like, maybe, you know, we don't generate money like, say, the first team men's team would in terms of gate receipts, so we have to rely on the goodwill of good companies, and so hopefully now, you know, the next couple of days we'll be announcing something like that. But it's been great support from the club, and it just kind of allows me and the players to focus on the football.
I suppose, speaking of which, I was going to ask, from your perspective as the coach, what would success look like? You know, you're on the plane back from Italy. What would feel like a successful tournament for you and the team?
It's difficult to gauge what would be successful, because we all want to say we'd want to go out and we want to win. But I think, you know, I think Jack Charlton said it in 1990, you want to go out there, you want to be competitive, you know, you want to prepare right, and you want to do the right things and see what comes of it. I think performance is the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think if we're coming off that pitch after a match with our heads held high, you know, in terms of, okay, we gave everything we could. Yeah. You know, I made the right decisions on the pitch in terms of making, you know, substitutions or tactics or whatever, and the players executed those instructions. We can't ask for any more. We'd love to get out of the group. We'll see how it goes. I suppose the aim would be to try and finish in that top half of teams.
Yep.
There's eight going, so we'd love to finish in the top four. We're under no illusions. As I said, there's teams there with substantial budgets that are paying players, that are transferring players over from different countries.
Yep.
We have to be realistic. So for me, it's performance based, and what will come in terms of results, you know, that would be a natural thing. So,
and for the kind of structure of the team itself, you mentioned there before we started recording that maybe it's a more kind of mature squad, like a lot of the players would have been kind of playing for quite a while.
Sure.
Do you want to just maybe take a few minutes to talk about, I suppose, a free plug for you know, how people can get involved if they are interested and what it involves?
Like, there is a lot of material online in terms of, like, you know, just YouTube videos and seeing what the guys do, but we're always welcoming people. We hope to have a new guy now. Out of the blue, the club put out a message online and someone got in touch. You know, so we want these guys to come out training, come out and have a look and see, ask questions. You know, I always reference from my time, Dave White was I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but Dave White was a sergeant in the Guards, had an accident while on duty, lost his leg, and it took him 4 years before he even kind of even got to speak to another amputee.
Wow.
And we spent a long time chasing Dave and trying to get him out training, and now he's an international player and he's one of the focal points of our team. And, you know, I'd like to think that it's one of the best things he's ever done. Maybe the best thing he's done since the injury that he had. It just gives people a new lease of life, and particularly people with maybe competitive spirit. We're not a charity, we're not here to, you know, just be nice. We're here to compete. And for me, from my point of view, I think as a competitor and as a sports person, it gives you that environment. It's just slightly different rules compared to, say, mainstream football.
And I guess on that point, I can imagine there must be an amazing sort of culture of support within the team, because all of these people have faced some sort of challenge to get to where they are now. And as you said, they might often feel quite isolated.
Yeah, I would imagine, like, it's a normal team environment.
Yeah.
It's everything that you expect a team to be: supportive. They question you when you underperform. They pull you up when you need to be pulled up.
Yep.
You know, we push each other in training. They push me in terms of my standards and what I'm bringing to the table. It's like, it's just a normal team environment, which is something that, again, when I came into it, I came in a little bit maybe thinking, okay, I'm here to help these guys. I'm here to extract as much as I can from these footballers.
Yeah.
You know? So that was the biggest thing for me coming in. And I think if you have that little bit of drive in you, there is the support there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And of course there are the little discussions that lads might have, and it's even small little things that I'll hear when we're travelling to Dublin or whatever. It's, you know, lads will be talking about their prosthetic leg, or sometimes they might delve in deep and just have a chat in the back about, you know the time I was in hospital staring at the ceiling for 6 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
And those kind of conversations are important for the guys, but it's done in a very natural, non-forced way, and it's very nice to see it. But at the end of the day, we're going to a game that we want to win, you know.
Yeah.
So they come back into it very quickly, so it's brilliant in that side of things. And there is great support, and not just in the team but in the international team as well. There's a great camaraderie between the other teams in the league. We want to beat them, we want to beat them well, but there's also that support.
Yeah.
You know, so it's great. It is a fantastic community of people, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much for coming in today, and obviously we wish you and the team all the very best of luck in Italy, and we'll maybe catch up afterwards.
Absolutely.
And see how you got on.
Brilliant, thank you very much. Thanks, Ed.
Dara was in studio to chat with me, but I also got the chance to talk over the phone with Rory Murphy, who is one of the players on Dara's team. And he told me his story of getting involved with Cork City and what he's expecting from that upcoming European campaign. Rory, you're very welcome to the Big Red Bench. How are you getting on?
Good, thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, very good.
Going back to basics for you, how did you actually first come across the Cork City amputee team and get involved in it?
I suppose it would have been maybe 2017, I think, when so I wasn't playing amputee football at all, and David Saunders, who was an old teammate of ours, he actually passed away last year as well. So he contacted me. He got my details from somebody, I guess, who just had passed on that he knew an amputee. And he contacted me and just asked me if I was interested in getting involved. That was kind of right before they went to the European Championships in Istanbul in 2017 with the Irish team. So I met up with him a couple of times and he just kind of, you know, got training with him, basically, him and another lad. And so then he went to the European Championships, came back, and then that was kind of around the time that they were setting up the league. So that was with Cork City, Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians. So that was kind of basically how it started, and really, probably October, November 2017, I think.
And had you been kind of involved in sport when you were younger and things like that? Was it something that you were kind of happy enough to get back into a competitive environment?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I suppose I kind of played soccer from probably the ages of 11 right up until I was about 25. So yeah, I was 25 when I lost my leg. So I'd been playing the whole time, really, throughout my life. Played with kind of Douglas Hall up to 18. And then kind of after that, I kind of lost a little bit of interest, but still kind of played away. Played a little bit AUL with Grangevale, and then kind of got into the Business League with Rochester Stores, and that's kind of where I was up until I lost my leg.
And I was talking to Jarrah about this, and he kind of underlined the fact that it's a very competitive environment amongst the team and then domestically and obviously at the European and international level as well. How important is that for you, that it's sort of, it's obviously it's great from a personal standpoint to have fellow amputees around you, but equally it's just a normal sporting environment. It's not that you're treated any differently, you know, you get to have the kind of same sporting expectations as any other team.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I probably had a little bit of kind of reservations when I kind of first found out about the sport, and it's just when I kind of, my first training session was, I just went along to kind of just join in with the international team just to kind of get into it, and I was just absolutely blown away. Like, I couldn't believe it. You know, you kind of have your preconceptions of, you know, a bunch of, you know, kind of, I suppose, in a sense, disabled lads just kind of meeting up and kicking the ball around, whereas, you know, it was absolutely nothing at all like that. You know, even the training, it was just, you know, full on, like pretty much everything I'd experienced beforehand. The only difference was it was guys on crutches.
Yeah.
But the football was the exact same. Competitiveness was the same. You know, the application, everything, the training, it's all, you know, so professional. And yeah, I couldn't believe it, to be honest.
And of course, the next big thing on the team's agenda is the EAFF Champions League in Italy in the next couple of weeks. And I think I'm right in saying the team last qualified for that competition back in 2018. So would you have just missed that, or were you involved then as well?
No, yeah, I was involved. Yeah, so I was involved from the first season. So yeah, we won the league that first year, which qualified us to the Champions League, which was actually the first Champions League they hosted in amputee football. So that was out in Tbilisi in Georgia. So yeah, it was a bit of a trek getting there and everything, but yeah, it was just great. It was amazing, you know, just to kind of to experience playing, you know, European football against other clubs from all over the world, well, all over Europe. Yeah, it was incredible. So we won the league again last year. That was our first time since, and that's qualified us for the Champions League now in Italy.
And I suppose since it's going to be your second time taking part in it, what kind of learnings are you taking from that previous experience into this one, given that it was quite a while ago and you've obviously played a lot of football in the interim?
Yeah, well, I guess the big difference in that was we had to play two matches in a day. So, like, we've two matches on the Friday, two matches on the Saturday, which was, you know, something, it's quite taxing on the body. You know, you've got to utilise your squad. We've got, I think we might have a squad of about 11 or a few players, so it's 7 aside, but, you know, the experience of, you know, using the substitutes, because it's a roll-on, roll-off game as well. And, you know, making sure that everybody gets game time, because, as I said, we play our first game, I think, at 12 o'clock on the Friday, and then we're out again at 4 o'clock for the second game. Wow. So, you know, you don't have a huge amount of recovery between games. And as you can imagine, hopping around on crutches for an hour is fairly taxing on the body.
Yeah, absolutely. That seems like, I mean, you would never, you'd never typically see that happen, I guess, at a European professional level. But I suppose it just goes to show again, like the level of effort and fitness and training that's going into preparing you for that.
Well, that's it, yeah. I mean, we try to train football-wise. We kind of meet up once or twice a week. And then that's for maybe an hour and a half, just a kind of football-focused training session. And then on top of that, then I go to, you know, strength and conditioning classes a couple of times a week. And then we're kind of expected to do our own bit, you know, and maybe on a Saturday or Sunday, our own bit of training, which, you know, might be an extra bit of running on the crutches at home.
Yeah, and
so, yeah.
What are you kind of most looking forward to, I suppose, from the competition in Italy?
I suppose doing well, really. We were so early the first time round. You know, a lot of our players are quite new to the sport. I think we've a lot more experience this time round, even through the international scene. You know, most of our players have played in World Cup tournaments, we've played in European Championships. So I think, yeah, this time round we'll have a lot of experience that we'll be able to lean on when we get there.
Definitely. And you've been playing, as you said, for quite a few years now. So what are you kind of hoping for from the team in terms of performance in the games that you're going to be playing? Because Dara was explaining to me earlier, you know, there's a serious level of professionalism in a lot of the teams. And as it's basically the best eight in Europe. So it's, you know, there's a lot of expectation there.
Yeah, we've got a tough group, actually. We've got the reigning champions there, Sehimbi from Turkey. And we've also got the team that finished second in the last Champions League, Wisla Krakow. And then the other team in the group is Everton. So it is a tough group. It's probably a bit unlucky that way, and it's probably the group at best. But I think there's no reason why we can't hold our own and finish in the top two. Certainly, I think second place in the group is definitely achievable. And with that, then you're into you're into semi-final essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose if there's anyone listening who maybe this is their first time hearing about it, or, you know, they're kind of wondering how to get involved from a player standpoint, what would you kind of say to people if they're like you, a bit skeptical maybe about what to expect?
I would say just, you know, reach out, come along, have a look, you know. I mean, it's not going to be for everybody. We've had people come along in the past and they've maybe gotten involved in a couple of training sessions and realised, look, it's not for them, and that's fine. But, you know, don't be scared to have a look, take that next step. It's easily the best thing I've ever done. You know, like, how often do you get the opportunity, you know, to play for a club like Cork City, to be, you know, have that involvement with that club, and then the opportunities that leads to from an international perspective, to represent your country, to play in football tournaments all over the world. It's life-changing, really.
Definitely, really, really special, and a very big couple of weeks coming up. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us here on the Big Red Bench, and very best of luck in Italy.
That's great. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Really exciting couple of weeks coming up for the Cork City FC amputee team. And if you did want to find out more info about that, you can do so on the Cork City FC website, which is corkcityfc.ie. Now, it is past the 90-minute mark in that UEFA Nations League game between Bulgaria and Northern Ireland, but it is still 1-0 to Bulgaria, and they are just about heading into the last minute of extra time. So unless Northern Ireland can pull out a very late winner, it's going to be a loss for them, which will be disappointing, especially considering that they had got that win against Luxembourg earlier on in the week. But obviously Bulgaria, a tough place to go to and get a win. And I have to say the pitch is in fairly miserable condition as well, which does make things certainly tougher for a visiting side. But that is everything that I've got time for this evening, folks. Thank you as always for tuning in to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the last hour. If you missed anything from this evening's show or you want to listen back, the Big Red Bench podcast will be available shortly after I'm off air. In the meantime though, don't go anywhere, because Mags Blackburn is up next with Green on Red.